Today's episode of the Film Stage Roundtable is brought to you by Mubi, the streaming online cinema. For your free 30-day trial of Mubi, go to mubi.com/filmstage.
Try to see it my way. Do I have to keep on talking till I can go on? While you see it your way, run the risk of knowing that our love may soon be gone. We can work it out. We can work it out.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to a brand new episode of the Film Stage Roundtable, the spin-off podcast from the Film Stage Show. As always, instead of doing a full review of a movie during these episodes, we will be talking about things that are in the movie and pop culture zeitgeist, things that desire to be talked about, or random topics that we just felt like exploring, and we hope you enjoy listening. Before we begin, we want to extend an invitation to everyone out there to let us know what kinds of things you want to hear about. Follow us on Twitter, tweet at us individually, or at Film Stage Show, or follow us on Facebook and post there, and you can be the person who is in charge of telling us what to do. Who in God's name are we? I'm your host, Brian J. Rowan. With me today, we have Michael Snydell.
Hello.
We also have Bill Graham.
Woo!
Always excited to hear his own voice. It has been like a week and a half since we've spoken to one another. This is like the longest we've gone without speaking to each other, guys.
What?
I'm glad.
Has it been that long?
Yeah. Jesus. We're recording this Thursday night. It was last Monday when we recorded The Handmaiden. So we had like a full week off from each other.
Well, we were bugging each other behind the scenes, let's be honest here.
This is true. But these podcasts are like both a source of energy and an utter psychic drain on me. So today I was like, why am I at once super excited for this, but also exhausted at the thought of it? And that occurred to me that it's been really long since we've spoken to each other. Not only that, but this is a Thursday. We usually record these roundtables on Wednesdays. And I don't know about you guys, but I have 90% less energy on a Thursday than I do on a Wednesday. Because the work week is almost over, and I can see the end, but I still have one whole goddamn Friday to get through. So, if I'm a little more ornery today than usual, you know why. Before we get into our topics, let's talk about the wonder that is Mubi. Mubi is, of course, our sponsor during these episodes. And Mubi is a curated online cinema that offers the best of foreign, independent, and general all-around awesome film. Their curators select. It's happening. Thursday's already getting to me. Their curators select a new film each day that you will have 30 days to watch. After 30 days, that film disappears. But again, every day a new film is added. So you always have 30 films to choose from. We are mere days away from Halloween, and we are still in the midst of horrific October, and today's movie is actually Calvary, which is what I spoke about last time. Not the Brendan Gleeson movie. This is a 2004 film from Belgium. I looked at the trailer today to remind myself of why this movie seemed so crazy. I don't want to tell anyone anything about this, except for the fact that the trailer, you know, is one of those things. The English quote unquote trailer involves like just a series of shots of bad things happening and, you know, words slamming up on the screen. And so it says, what's the worst that could happen? And then after a particularly staggering montage of stuff, it says quite cryptically, ask the pig. What does that mean? I don't
know. Do you wish to live deliciously, Brian?
Yeah, obviously, that would be a goat. So,
yes.
I remember seeing that in indie theaters, and I was like, ooh, I have to see that movie. I never did, so I still don't know what the pig has to do with anything, but I am terrified at the thought, and I am totally totally looking forward to watching this film. So, if you want to be like me and figure out what the pig has to say about things, go to mubi.com/filmstage and get your 30-day trial so that you can watch Calvary and we can figure out what that pig is all about. That's mubi.com/filmstage and then immediately watch Calvary. So that's that. We can now get in to our first topic, which I know I say that these aren't review episodes, but Netflix dropped its new season of the British television show that it brought to America, Black Mirror, last Friday. People, I assume, have had time to check out at least a few of the episodes. The internet's been buzzing about it. So we wanted to talk about it because we realized as we were speaking that we had some thoughts and opinions, and this would be the ideal time to talk about them. So, our first topic is reflecting on Black Mirror. Is the film. The song Paint It Black by the Rolling Stones. A slightly uninspired choice, but what the hell. I enjoy it.
In fact, that baby boomer target.
You know that baby boomers are like our biggest audience. There's
yeah, they love The Handmaiden.
There's no data to support what I just said. This actually makes me think of something that I could have brought up in our second topic, but let's forget about that for now. We are here to talk about the first episode of the new season of Black Mirror. Then we'll also spend some time on the second, just to like give an idea of how we feel about this season. I know, Bill, that you've only seen the first two, and we sort of yes. had to bully you into that. Michael, how many episodes of the new season have you seen?
Is San Junipero 4?
Yeah.
Then I have seen I finished San Junipero and stopped there.
Okay. Same with me. I watched the first four. There are two left. I did not hear great things about them, and I just decided that would be the end of it. I'm sure on some rainy day sure. when I'm sick with the flu, maybe I'll watch the other two.
I'm kind of curious about the last one, only because it's partly because it's Kelly MacDonald, who's been, you know, kind of a scene stealer in some things, and it's also, I believe, a half an hour longer than all the other ones. Which,
because if there's,
you know,
that will make this season better, it's making the episode longer. I've seen the first two seasons in their entirety. I have not seen the Christmas special. Have both of you seen the first two seasons?
First two seasons and Christmas special for me.
Okay, Bill, this is the first you've seen of Black Mirror.
No.
So what have you seen previously?
I've seen two episodes. I've seen the first two episodes, and then I stopped there. And then I saw these two episodes, and then I stopped there.
So you saw the National Anthem, which is the one with the pig.
Yep.
We could ask that politician. Pig what's up.
Yeah. Don't ask, that pig is going to say what's down. No.
Yeah. Oh,
and
Jesus.
And then 15 Million Merits, is that the American Idol type one?
Yep.
Okay.
I'm one of like the few people who brings up like 15 Million Merits as one of my favorites.
Really? I mean, okay.
Yeah.
I liked it, but as one of my favorites, hell no.
You've only seen four of them.
Yeah, I've only seen four of them, and I would like to return my time on all of them. So,
damn.
Bill Graham, not a fucking fan of Black Mirror.
Yeah.
Now,
no.
I was a great fan of the first two seasons of Black Mirror. I thought that the episodes ranged from fine to quite good. So things like White Bear, Be Right Back, 15 Million Merits, those are like some great stuff, you know, the National Anthem.
I haven't seen like two of those, so
yeah,
like eh.
And people when these new ones showed up, were kind of crowing about them like, you know, oh, it's back and it's just as good as ever. And I was super disappointed. And Michael, I believe that you were as well.
Yeah. Just to give some brief context, yeah, the first two seasons, like you, I thought they were fine to very good. I don't know. I guess we'll need to get into each of them separately, but I mean, I think that they, to jump into this conversation, I think a big problem with these two is even more than past seasons, they feel insular and artificial to the point where it became difficult for me to buy into the conceit. And that's a difficult stumbling block when then, you know, that's supposed to be a starting point.
Right.
I definitely like to, I guess, are we doing general thoughts right now? Are we going to jump right into the first episode? What do you guys want to do?
Let's do general. Well, I want to pose a direct question to Bill. You saw the two first episodes of the first season and the two first episodes of the third season, the new one that just came out. Which would you say is the more quality season just based on what you saw?
Oh, damn it.
Well, you're in a privileged is maybe not the right word, but you're in a weird position because it seems like most people have seen all of this.
Yeah, well,
so I'm curious.
Look, here's my thing. Well, I don't know. Some of y'all people have way too much time on your hands. Let me say that. these episodes are an hour each, so if you watch two of them, it's a movie. And I mean, I guess you get halfway through and you're just like, well, I can't turn back now, so I might as well spend the rest of this 30 minutes watching this episode. But I'm the kind of person that if I get 30 minutes in and I'm like, I'm not feeling it, I'm just going to turn that shit off. So, and I may not return to it. So, I mean, if you're asking me which one would I rather watch again, I'd much rather look. The pig episode was hilarious, and it was everything that like – Hacking Society kind of like attempts to try to I don't know, like it wants to be its goal, right, is to actually have an effect like that. And right. It's like, I don't know, it was enjoyable to see the stupidity slash craziness of that idea unfold and how helpless some of these politicians were because they were in the middle of like a media spiral and they just couldn't get around it and they had to act quickly. They were given a deadline that just was encroaching on them the entire time. And I thought their solutions and things like that were hilarious, and it was fun to see. That episode I quite enjoyed. And then just like every episode since has just been dreary and dull, and I get it. Like, it's exploring some of the downfalls of technology and things like that. But honestly, I live in this age, and I hear from people older than me all the time that oh, you crazy kids and your devices, you guys don't interact. And it's like, fuck you guys. Like, I interact with my friends all the time. I try and see them on a regular basis. Like, it just seems like it's the millennial like blues that we're watching on the television. So I mean, give me that first episode over all three of these other episodes, to okay. be honest.
All right, well, now that we've got that to setting us up.
Yeah, general settings.
Bill, I love the millennial blues. I have not heard that in all the things I've ever read about this show. I've never heard that, and that's just great.
We should make our own show called The Millennial Blues.
It would look an awful lot like this.
I was about to say, I'm sure it would just be a cheap Black Mirror knockoff, but we wouldn't have to center it on technology.
Well, but then again, can I also say
millennials are obsessed with technology.
So I'm trying to remember the showrunner, the guy behind all of this, but he's basically
Charlie Brooker.
Yeah, he's basically written from what I read on the Wikipedia. And look, like it used to be when you said Wikipedia, everybody was like, "Whoa, well, that's not you know, it doesn't have any sources and blah blah." And now it's actually pretty fucking like legit. Like you can safely say I saw it on Wikipedia, and you can, unless someone fucked with it like 2 minutes before you saw it, it's probably legit. So I was reading on there, and by the way, anytime you hear someone say, "Oh, I saw it on IMDb," also that is user submitted stuff as well. I don't know if people are aware of that. But I was reading on there, and he's basically written or co-written every single episode except one in season one, I think. And that's it. So he's basically behind all of these. Yeah. And a lot of them he's written by himself. He's given solo writing credit. So I guess my main issue isn't even with the directors. It's with him. I'm like, man, you are. Man, I just want to give you back your Cheerios from when they were taken away. I don't know.
I will say that let's talk.
Because I feel like we should mention Nosedive is not Nosedive is not written by him.
Yeah,
it's written by Rashida Jones and Michael Schur.
Right. Parks and Rec team.
Yeah.
I will say that where most of my issues with this show come in through the writing. So let's talk about Nosedive, because that's...
Want to ask real quick, generally like anthologies? I mean, some people just don't like anthology stories.
I was never one to watch Tales from the Crypt. I was a little too young to watch that. I never went back and watched Twilight Zone or anything so anthology. What have I been exposed to? I've been exposed to the VHS films. I've been exposed to, I'm trying to think of anything else that's big that I would have been exposed to. No, those are individual films.
That's an anthology. They're doing we need to define anthology down more, because like Fargo is an anthology TV series.
Sure. What I call that is a mini series, and each mini series is a separate season from each other.
So
right?
We're just gonna talk about
I'm talking about single contained stories in an episode, period.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That don't necessarily directly relate.
Yeah. So like the Twilight Zone, The Outer Limits, Night Gallery.
Sure.
Yes.
I mean, if you want to be difficult, you could also say, you know, Creature of the Week, procedural, you know, things in X-Files or something would even fall into that.
Does Law and Order count? Because
or Law and Order. Sorry, I'm ruining my point.
No, really Law and Order doesn't count. Law and Order doesn't count because it's got the same fucking people.
Well, that's what I was going to say about the X-Files, is that the X-Files always has Mulder and Scully.
All right. I guess the point I just wanted to get at is, you know, if you are not, you know, inclined to just really get into something like Twilight Zone, I'm wondering how much of a barrier that is to enjoying that. But again, that's a little unfair as well.
Like Bill said, these are long enough that they should be able to stand on their own.
I would agree.
Yeah. And I mean, the first one is an hour and 10 minutes or somewhere around there. It's like an hour and six. So, I mean, these are basically... When you boil it down to it, these people are given kind of free rein to basically make a short movie. We'll call it that. We won't call it a short film. We'll call it a short movie. And it just happens to be in a television format.
Right.
Sure.
So let's actually talk about Nosedive.
Okay.
Okay.
Guys, I just realized our boy Max Richter did the soundtrack on this one.
On Nosedive?
Yeah.
That does not surprise me. But here's the thing. I'll kick us off. I'll give Bill his wish from last week and go first. So
yes, what?
So Nosedive is about a woman living in a world where you can rate people, not just their photos, not, you know, their tweets, you favorite them. No, you rate things related to a person and your interaction with them. And that applies to their overall rating in the world. So what basically happens is if you use Uber, like imagine if your Uber rating that you get from drivers applied to like every aspect of your life. So people will like you more if you have a higher number because it's weighted in a bit. They will get away from you if you have a lower number because they assume that you're an undesirable asshole. The best analogy is the Meow Meow Beans episode of Community. So this woman, played by Bryce Dallas Howard, her name is Lacey, lives in this world, needs to find a new place to live. She is like a 4.3 when we meet her, and the place that she wants to move, her little aspirational apartment complex, gives a 20% discount to people who are a 4.5 or higher, so she begins doing everything she can to become a 4.5. Okay, this is directed by Joe Wright, who we love here. I think I can't stop bringing him up on Roundtable episodes.
We love is more y'all love. I'm okay.
All right, whatever, asshole. So Joe Wright directed this. As we said, it was written by Michael Schur and Rashida Jones. And here's where it comes in for me. It's such a basic idea, and they stretch it out for so long, and I think the direction is great. I think that Bryce Dallas Howard is fantastic, but it's just not good. Like, yeah. In spite of the music, in spite of the direction, in spite of her strong performance, it's such like a skin deep, really straightforward, and at the end, really poorly resolved story that never quite gets as bleak as it seems to want to be.
Okay.
I'm interested what other people think about it. So let's start with Michael Snydell.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to agree with you on most of those points. I mean, I think Joe Wright is doing some. I don't think his work in this is very interesting, and I did because I started to get into that a little bit, you know, because the neighborhoods and the world in terms of the set decoration and things that are being presented in this episode, you know, it's very clinically glamorous and, you know, hoity-toity. And there's a implicit, you know, class suggestion in how ratings go into things and how the community she lives in, how I guess my problem with both the way that this is directed and written is that for, you know, that first half of the episode, you're seeing these very manicured, very distinctively directed moments and interactions between characters. And it's not like you really feel like you're seeing anything interesting. And I guess what the premise is supposed to, you know, you're also supposed to have a suspension of disbelief that in this world, no one can actually, you know, say anything that they actually feel, which is fine, but it all feels so strangely flat, and it becomes very clear that any anomalies in the episode, like her brother or a person at her work who's kind of a pariah, that those things are entirely set up to be devices. And that just becomes very irritating, especially as it continues and wraps around a storyline that becomes, you know, partly a road trip, becomes, you know, partly, you know, it becomes Planes, Trains, and Automobiles for a little while.
I was going to say it becomes like a passion play. It's like, sure. it's really, and this is one of my problems with this, is like, there's so many interesting places this can go. And instead what it does is basically gives her like the arc of a gambler in a movie, where it's like, okay, you've got to make this one big score to get out of all your problems. And it's like, did any of us believe for a second that things might work out?
And I guess the other thing is too, that just as it goes on and on, you know where it's directed. You know, you have Cherry Jones, who's the truck driver in the second half of the episode. And it's just everything felt so neatly deployed in a way that moves beyond suspension of disbelief to what just feels clumsily written to me. Right. And especially in the third act and the climax, it's something that's resolved very poorly. What I will say about this is I think Bryce Dallas Howard does give a very good performance. And that feels weird to say because she's not given very good material, and a lot of times it's very big, but in her frustration and the way that she almost, you know, becomes, has like a feral honesty towards the end. Like it's very, very watchable, even as the whole time I'm wondering, I'm looking down at my watch.
And you're wondering, like, they couldn't have taken another pass at this in the script.
Sure.
Bill Graham, what did you think of Nosedive?
So right from the get-go, I was really irritated by the simple concept of it. I have watched that Community episode, and look, like it's very simple for me, and this can kind of go back to why some people. Jesus, I'm not going to go down that right.
No. Please look, go down that route.
Damn it. Okay. Well, I mean, look, like. I can't laugh at very many of the DC movies, and even the really bad Marvel films, most of them have a light touch and a sense of humor that just like allows you to get through the runtime anyways. So if you can accept it just as, okay, this isn't working as a superhero movie, at least you can laugh at some of the jokes and things like that and some of the lighthearted banter. And that's kind of what this is versus Community, right? Community has that lighthearted banter, and it has that ability to touch on strong concepts and strong ideas while also being light and kind of airy about it. So even if they touch on depressing things like what's his face's like ridiculous amount of racism and misogyny and everything like that.
That is a show that, to make your point, Bill, has focused two of its best episodes on like the lingering threat of suicide for two of its characters.
Yeah. I mean, It Wait, will. Guys,
do we like Meow Yo Beans? Do we like that episode?
I'm curious. Yeah.
Okay.
I really enjoyed it. Yeah, I really enjoyed how it kind of explored that.
No, I think it's a. Yeah, no, I don't like that episode, but I think it's more successful than this.
Well, there, sure. That's good enough for me.
Yeah.
Rather than litigating Meow Meow Beans, but yes, Bill, as you were saying.
Okay, so that's kind of my basic like. Introduction, right, is okay, so this is going to be depressing, this isn't going to be lighthearted and airy, fine, okay, now how do they explore it? So what they basically explored is like you're saying, they kind of turn it almost into kind of a classism in a way, and that kind of bothered me, but more than anything, what it reminded me so much of. And look, I haven't been in the service industry or the food service industry as part of being a waiter, but this kind of forced niceness reminds me a lot of that, right? I've been in service industries where I have a customer that I have to please. And even then, you catch yourself not saying certain things because you want to make sure that this entire transaction goes smoothly. That nowadays we have this potential recourse where it's not just, oh, I had a bad interaction with the customer and that's the end of it, right? Now I have a bad interaction with the customer and they may write something negative on my Facebook page, or they may write something negative on my Yelp page, or they may write something negative on my Amazon review or my eBay, or, you know, whatever is this interaction that you're having. Somewhere down the line, you may piss them off enough to where they literally get on a website where you're reviewed as a service and negatively review you. And it reminds me kind of this, explored in a way that's like personal interactions. And all of it just feels so gross to me. And I understand that what they're kind of hinting at is, are people that, like on Instagram, that have a bunch of followers and they get a bunch of likes and or hearts and, you know, whatever. And it's like people are kind of chasing that and they're setting up photos that look much better than, like, you know, the interactions that they actually have. They're like, all right, everybody, let's get together and like smile for this one fucking photo and then let's move on with our lives, you know, so I can post it on Instagram or Facebook. And I get that. Like, I understand that this is kind of extrapolated out, but what are they actually doing with it? They're turning it into almost a way that it becomes like your I'm trying to remember what it's called. Your score, your credit score, right? Where it starts to like turn into actual interactions, become a currency in unlocking certain things. Like, oh, it's like you have a really high credit score. No, you just really have a really good ability to kiss a bunch of ass and like be popular, and that's about it. Like,
yeah,
it feels
trustworthy than a credit score.
Yeah, and it feels like this is just high school, like extrapolated out. So the bullies get to be bullies, and the unpopular nerdy people are ostracized. And it's just like, wait, who created this app, and why would they create this app?
I'm so glad you brought that up, Bill, because that is something that like this episode does a very poor job of explaining, because it doesn't seem like there's anyone that's checked out of it. It's like, yeah, if you're alive, you're in the system, and like there's never a point where someone's like, you know, I'm thinking of not having this app anymore.
Well,
like,
no, that's the truck driver, guys.
No, well, she still has a rating.
Yeah,
she does, she's like not.
But is
she's
this
not
a,
playing the game?
Is this a government thing? Is this just an app? Because
yeah,
like the airports use it.
Yep.
The rental car
and
places
the car rentals. Yep.
Yeah.
And there's like law enforcement as well. Who,
yeah.
You know,
the TSA comes up and is like, ma'am, we're going to have to dock you a point. I will say
that interaction specifically is one of those moments. I briefly reviewed, why can't I think of anything? Pride and Prejudice and Zombies. And there's a moment in that film that is okay. That is absolutely glorious. And it makes you realize how much better that entire film could have been because of this one little episode in the middle. And right. That specific interaction was so cleverly done. It made so much sense. Okay, I'm going to dock you a full point for like a temporary period. And any negative interaction you have from this point on is going to double it, and it's going to stick around. And it's like, if this is the currency of all these people, docking you a full point is like you can see it on her face. She is devastated. And what does it do? it literally nosedives the rest of the episode, right? And look, I guess these episodes are an hour. I don't know how much we want to avoid spoilers and whatever, but like,
well, I'm gonna get full spoilers as soon as you're done.
Okay.
So
okay, well, I mean, that was kind of a spoiler, but I mean, it's relevant to talk about because that is one of those super clever moments that I thought, wow, someone really did like extrapolated this out and thought of how do I enforce this without being a complete nutter dick. Let me do something temporary that gets people's attention and then moves them along, right? That encourages them to get the hell out of that situation.
It's basically a public shaming, which is what we love to do on the internet anyway. And so go ahead.
I just want to say, well, one other part that I like that's kind of extension of that is when she goes to the rental car place and he is obviously watching porn and she can't decide how to react to it. Like, that was one of the most, along with the moment that Bill mentioned, that was one of the most human moments in the entire episode.
Right.
And that's yeah.
That's what I actually, so here's my problem with this episode. There's a general obviousness to this that wasn't so in the previous episodes that I saw. It was something that had been done a lot better in a 22-minute Community episode. But the other problem is, again, like, I don't think they put enough thought into what's the most interesting thing we can do with this, or what are we trying to talk about? Because, like, we don't really rate our friends. This would have to be a whole new thing that came about. And, you know, like, Uber and stuff, sure, they do that, and I know people who are like, well, if you get a low enough Uber rating, like, it's harder to get a driver. But, like, that moment with the guy in the airport docking her a point and then like saying, you know, it's going to be double now if you get negative downvoted. That's like the most interesting thing. And that's what this should have focused on, is how this is an extension of like internet shaming. So people, you know, have done stupid things that used to be private in their lives. And now, because of the internet, it's not so. So that is the thing that I think they should have focused on, rather than just this concept of, oh, people with higher numbers get treated better, right? And
yeah,
what I think would have been an even more interesting way to take this, because at the end, like, her friend asks her not to come to this wedding because she's like a 2.6 or something like that. And her friend's like, you know, you were 4.2. That was fine. But like, as a 2.6, I can't have you here like pulling down my rating. And she has this awful speech getting ready to go. And she's like, I'm going to go to that wedding. I'm going to deliver that speech. And she seems to still think that maybe she can make a point there until she gets drunk and then says, fuck it.
Guys, are we supposed to find that speech in any way? What are we supposed to think of that speech?
I don't know. I think
it's supposed to be a train wreck. That whole interaction is supposed to be a train wreck. And Alice Eve's character calls her on it, and she basically says, look, I know that when I invited you, that you were going to come here simply because of this. Right? Yeah,
sure. It's a transaction.
It is.
Yeah, that speech is like, I can't, like, for a while I couldn't tell if it was supposed to be like a liberating moment or a pathetic moment or what.
Yeah, I really didn't know.
And my thing is, I wish, and this, and you know, Bill, you're talking about like how these tend to be pretty bleak. I think this one has a vaguely good
optimistic
ending. Yeah, because
yeah,
at the end of it,
I kind of like the ending. Yeah.
But like, if you really want to get bleak with this, she should have come in there like an insult comic and just like straight up told the
truth. Just roasted.
roasted her friend who's getting married. And then I think that the more interesting tack to take would be if she's like, this broad is just a piece of shit, like slept with a guy that I was interested in, blah, blah, blah. And if suddenly, like, her number started rising and the bride's number started falling.
No, but that would have been...
I just think that that would, because then it would have been interesting. You could have had a coda where, like, you think maybe she's, like, been corrupted or these people got the wrong idea. Like, I think that her bottoming out and leaving the system and then tossing insults back and forth with this guy in jail, it's not as interesting as if she got pulled back in because of her attempted liberation and then she had to struggle with what that meant.
I don't know about that one.
You know the JetBlue guy who, like, quit his job, pulled the emergency slide, like, took a beer and then peaced out? Like,
yeah, I remember that guy. Yeah.
Everyone on the internet was, like, applauding that guy. And then it came out that, like, he's, like, not a good person and had actually been awful that entire flight. But, like, because we only knew this one moment that seemed, like, real and everything that we wanted to do, we kind of lionized him for a bit. And I think that it would have been more interesting to give her the power that she wanted for...
Only to turn it around on her?
Yeah. Like, give her the opportunity to speak out. But all these people are like, oh, we're so, like, happy about this woman, like, speaking her mind. And, like, we all hated this Bridezilla bitch. So let's dock her, like, see what she does with a 2.0. Bump this girl up to, like, a 4.9. And then, like, linger on that for a sec. And see, like, if she is like, you assholes just voted me up, you're a bunch of idiots. Or if she's suddenly like, oh, well, thank you, I'm I'm just so excited to be here.
And her goofy laugh. Oh, fuck that laugh.
You couldn't say that in this world, Bill.
Yeah, I know. But I would have been downvoted.
We'd imagine
shit out of you.
Can you imagine what my goddamn rating would be? I would have been summarily put to death. But yeah, I think that it's just these new episodes, as typified by this one, are a little less inventive and a little less thoughtful and a little more obvious. And we're not going to have time to talk about the virtual reality one that happens next.
I actually think that one's better, but it's just me.
I mean, it's fine, but its ending is...
No, its ending is like 10 endings. It has as many endings as Return of the King.
but in a much shorter amount of time.
Sure.
And what I think that it typifies most is the idea that, like, oh, what's something we could do here that's really cool, but it's not thematically tied to anything else.
Yeah.
Like, this guy is punished in an ironic way, but not in a way that informs any of choice that he made.
Sure.
And that's one of the problems that I had with this episode, too, and with a lot of the other things, is that they're going for shock more than thoughtfulness.
But, guys, I do want to say, I like the other seasons of Black Mirror, but I think we're giving it too much credit to not call it obvious. There's a lot of obvious touches in the first two seasons. I mean, they may not have the exact problem you just spoke to, Brian, which I think is in actually all of this season, except weirdly the third one. But what they're saying is their actions do not inform the consequences. But I think we are giving a little bit too much credit to the first couple seasons by saying that this season is, you know, less clever. Obviousness was, I don't know, it's been a long time since the first couple seasons, but I'm just saying that.
Well, I would say that
the enigmatic nature of the first couple seasons was there, but it was always peripheral to the fact that those stories were pretty obvious once you got a quarter in.
Right. But they're obvious, but they're not about themselves in an obvious way. Does that make sense? Like, their premise and what they're trying to say may be obvious, but the way that they approach it and the things that it chooses to examine are less so.
Uh-huh.
That's what I would say anyway.
So here's something. Look, the show is all about, like, high concept technology and things like that. And I'm sitting here on Slash Film, and I guess I'm reading. What am I reading? This is the Reddit AMA, right? And so for the next season, and they're being asked a bunch of questions. And one of the questions that was asked that I think is just beautiful, and it's, I guess logistically it's kind of complicated, but okay, so here's the question. Have they considered fucking with the audience by having different ends or scenes depending on the day of the week someone is watching? Now, this would be perfect for the episode playtest, right? And so they said they've thought about it with playtest. They quote unquote wanted to do a nightmare mode for people watching it a second time, with different fourth wall breaking scenes, but it was just too logistically complicated. We may revisit the idea though. Now look, that is literally what this show should be doing. Like, that's what this show should be doing. If you're going to explore technology in this weird way and have each of these episodes kind of fucking depressing as hell or whatever, like, have fun with it. Play with the format of it. Play, like, quit being an hour long episode with a beginning and end that's narratively through, like, it has a narrative through line. Like, mess with it. Why not have fun with this in the way that you can explore technology? You know, like, maybe have an episode where right in the middle of it, it like blinks out, and a lot of people like will wonder, like, did my episode just end? Like, have it pull back to like the Netflix screen and just really confuse the hell out of people.
You
and
want,
like,
the eternal darkness of TV shows.
I was about, like, to say, like, this is like,
why not have fun with this format? Why not know that you're going to have eight episodes that are just going to drop out of the blue on Netflix? Like, just have fun with it. Pull episodes and rearrange them. Like, pull an episode out and put a completely different episode at like night. Like, have an Easter egg episode that only appears at night. Like, why not have fun with this whole format instead of just bringing it to us in this kind of bite-size like way that's so generic and so, I don't know.
If you
like
want the formal daring of the show to attempt to be more in line with its like thoughtfulness in terms of its view of the future.
Yeah. Are you about to get into the medium as the message?
Well, I was going to say,
you know,
like
have fun with it. I don't know. I mean that nightmare scenario sounds.
One.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. Like this episode already. I mean, look. Netflix bought the rights to it. They produced an entire season by themselves, right? Because they realized, like, I guess BBC or whoever originally produced the original series wasn't making another. And so, like, they obviously feel like this. And look, let's be honest. A lot of people are talking about this show. Right.
Yes.
So a lot of people have watched this show. So Netflix isn't going to release those stats and things like that. But I assume
that would be a total mind fuck if everyone's on Twitter like, man, the third episode, that ending when, like, you know, he gets his head chopped off and then everyone else is like, what are you talking about? The third episode ends with him getting married. And it's like, no, man, I'm telling you, like, you're talking about the one with the guy and the piercing. And it's like, yeah, that one, he dies at the end. And everyone will be like, no, he gets married. Oh, my God. I would actually pay money to see that happen.
Yeah. I mean, can you imagine like how big that would blow up on social media? And look, like, is this a gimmick? Sure, it's kind of a gimmick in a way, but if you did narratively change some of the outcome, this would be just like, I mean, there's books out there that have endings that, like, the authors specifically warn you, hey, you can end it here or you can keep reading and
yeah, those,
like, find out the other
adventure novels.
Well, I'm not talking about choose your own adventure novels specifically.
Oh,
I'm talking about some other, like, big name authors have endings like
that?
Guys,
Netflix?
I don't think Netflix would do something that.
Could Netflix do a choose your own adventure TV show?
I couldn't see Netflix doing that, though.
I don't know why they... I know that they probably won't, but they definitely have the ability to. Anyway, we need to end this, because we now only sure. have, like, 10 minutes to do our last one.
Well,
but that's our thoughts on Black Mirror. It is on Netflix now. I'm going to say, like, the first two seasons, when they dropped, it was like a treat, you know? It was this weird thing that was being its own thing, and I think that the problem... And this is a problem that Netflix had with Arrested Development, is that I think it wants people to be given more of what they think they want rather than really just continuing to do its own thing.
Hmm. Yeah.
And that's a subject for another day. We're going to get into our final topic. It's going to be much abridged from what I thought it was going to be, but we are here because it's Halloween and we already did the movies that scared us most. So we wanted to take this time, this 10 minutes, guys, to highlight a film that we think is an underappreciated or underserved horror gem. And so we're going to do that. We're going to give it to you. And maybe this will give you something that you wouldn't expect to watch to give yourself the chills this Halloween. So here we are, our second topic, a scare of which you may not be aware. Doing this podcast has taught me anything. It's that sometimes it's hard to know how quickly it will take Michael Jackson to actually begin singing on a Michael Jackson song. So I decided to just cut that short rather than waiting for him to actually sing. But that is Thriller by Michael Jackson. We're going to talk about movies that we think...
A goddamn fantastic song, by the way.
Oh, this is a perfect song. So, movies...
Guys, Vine is gone today, and I saw so many videos that had this song. People, there's just so many good Vines that involve this song.
It's true, Vine is dead. Long live Vine. did someone bring a horror Vine? Is that what we're going to do? All right. So, movies that we think don't get enough love that are horror-related. And like I said, we're going to have to be super quick, guys. So, in order to set a good precedent, I'm going to go first. Bill, again, you're welcome.
What?
I want to bring up, and I bring this up, I was planning on doing it anyway, but then I got to see a movie that's coming out in theaters on November 11th, and is currently, if you have DirecTV, on VOD, specifically for DirecTV. It's from A24, who we love, and that is The Monster by Brian Bertino. And Ooh. In watching The Monster, which... swear to God, it has like two of the best performances of the year in it. I decided that I should talk about Brian Bertino's first film, 2008's The Strangers.
Oh, okay.
Nice. You guys remember The Strangers?
I was about to call foul because I was like, you can't choose a film that just came out and call it underrated. That's not okay.
But okay. Bill, I agree with you. Ahead. Go ahead. I'm glad that I got to miss the foul call, but I think that just by the way A24 is releasing The Monster, I can already tell that it's going to be underrated. But anyway, this movie has Liv Tyler and Scott Speedman as a couple who go to a house in the woods. Not a cabin in the woods, mind you, but a house in the woods. And he has just proposed to her. She has not responded the way he thought he would. So things are already pretty bad. Until things start to happen in the house. And... one of the things that I love most about this movie, and I think it's a really important distinction, a lot of films will use jump scares to frighten people. You know, like the cat that jumps in front of the camera, or like the person turns around. The fucking Blair Witch had this in spades, where someone will turn around and someone will slam into them and they'll both go, whoa, and then the violins will go, bee. This movie has the opposite of that. It is two people standing in a house, they're like, What's going on? Someone will be standing in the middle of a room. There will be an empty doorway behind them. And a figure will very calmly step into that doorway. The music won't change. The person won't turn around and see them. And then the figure will just calmly walk out of the doorway. It is horrifying. It is a movie that made me afraid of negative space. And that is a true, true piece of cinema magic. This is a movie that makes a fire detector that moves from a table to a chair one of the most horrifying things you'll ever see. So, that is my recommendation. The Strangers. Seek it out where you can. I don't know if it's streaming. I don't know if it's on disc. You could probably find it at a Best Buy for like $2 in the bin. And it is worth many times that. I am so sad this movie wasn't a bigger hit.
Do you like funny games, Brian?
I do. I love funny games.
I'm gonna leave it there.
All right. Michael Snydell, let's rock to you. What is your
choice? So there's been a number of like horror films I finally caught up to this year. But probably one of my favorite experiences this year was catching the 1981 film Possession from director Andrzej Zawalski. I looked that up and I may be totally off. But Possession is a batshit movie from the 80s. And it is about... Well, it's about Sam Neill and Isabel Adjani, and they are a couple whose marriage is combusting, and that's where the movie starts. As the movie starts, Sam Neill comes home. He's a spy. He's an international spy, and he comes home, and his wife out of nowhere wants a divorce. And their relationship unravels in conventional and deeply unconventional ways as they both kind of show their innermost nature. And so it becomes a movie about God and the devil. It becomes a movie about what it means to try to control a significant other, and it also becomes an insane horror movie. If you may have seen a video at some point of Isabel Adjani in a metro station losing her mind while holding a bag of groceries, and in like a interpretive dance of a grotesque interpretive dance. It's an insane film, and it's not just the content, but Zawalski is an art house director, but he doesn't like static compositions at all. His camera is constantly moving, and it reflects the frayed and destroyed consciousness of the characters, and it's just really good and worth a look.
All right, Bill Graham, why don't you give us your quick recommendation of a horror film that you believe deserves a little more attention?
Sure. This one is pretty simple. It's Rec 2. I've mentioned the Rec series briefly here and there.
You should say REC 2.
Yes, brackets. Rec 2. This did inspire Quarantine, which was a shitty American remake. Don't watch that. Watch
Dexter's
Rec 1. Watch Rec 1 and then watch Rec 2. Rec 2 is basically an escalation of Rec 1. Rec 1 is about a journalist that is following a firefighter squad that go into apartment building and run into a bunch of religious zombies. And the second film is basically about a SWAT team that goes in to try and figure out what the hell's going on. So it's basically everything that you could. It reminds me a lot of Aliens versus Alien, right? Alien is very kind of horror centric, and this one actually goes even more into the horror element. It goes into more of the supernatural element, but it also has a bunch of dudes with head cameras and body armor and machine guns that are running around trying to figure out what the hell is going on.
So it is still found footage, Bill?
Yes, it's still found footage. Like I said, it's following a bunch of people around. They have head cameras on so they can talk to each other, see each other, and everything like that. And it's a lot of fun in that way. I don't think it ever really breaks the wall. What you basically see is through the head camera footage the entire time. All these different soldiers, SWAT team members that are coming in. And basically it gives them a weapon, a way to fight back. But what they're dealing with are still humans, and they don't quite know how to deal with that situation. It also kind of deals with like a government conspiracy to kind of it's basically just an escalation of the original film in a lot of fun and clever ways. And the religious aspects that it kind of delves into are kind of genuinely scary, especially towards the end. This is definitely one that is super enjoyable and also has some thrills and things like that. So, yeah, to me, this is one of the best versions of the found footage genre that, because unfortunately it is Spanish and it has subtitles, it's just not that big over here. So, yep.
Yeah. Well, I looked it up, guys, and it doesn't seem like any of our choices are streaming, not for free anyway. So if you all are interested, you're either going to have to plop some cash down or I guess Netflix DVD it. But these are all, I know, it's a horrifying concept.
Well, what you can do is you can literally get on Amazon, and more than likely you can purchase some of these films for like 99 cents.
Amazon's used DVD like, market.
Yes, that's what I was going to suggest. Like your used DVDs are going for pennies right now. So yeah, if you hop on Amazon, you can probably find one shipped to you for like $3.99. So yeah, for $4, you can basically take our recommendation and then, I don't know, maybe break the DVD and mail it to us and be like, I hate you, this movie was terrible, or something like that.
Oh my god, if I could get us a P.O. box where people could, like, send broken versions of movies that we told them to watch, with, like, just profanity written on them in magic marker, that would
be amazing. I don't know if y'all have ever broken a DVD, or specifically I broke a CD recently to try and destroy it. That is a very violent act. I don't know if y'all have ever done that, but there's a lot of things
for
that
the
go
longest time, and then it snaps.
And then it snaps and it goes everywhere. Pieces, yeah. And shards. It's I would say this is not something you want to do on a carpeted area.
No, go outside. Stand over your lawn or something and then break it and then send us a picture on Twitter. I shot a CD with a BB gun. Mm-hmm. That was not fun. Or it was fun. It was super fun, but it was not.
Did it ricochet back at you?
We were using pellets actually, and they were quote unquote hunting pellets. So they had a metal tip out on them.
You're a dumbass, Brent.
No. So it pierced it because we, first of all, this is a stupid story and I don't know why we're talking about it. I was proving to my friends what a good shot I was. So I was shooting in the middle of the CD and then they were like, wow, you know, you hit all in the middle, even though it's like, you know, 10 yards away or whatever. And then they were like, but that is an NSYNC CD we stole from my sister, so we should just shoot this motherfucker. Anyway, thank you for joining us today.
Bye.
Thank you, Bill. Let's do our listener feedback. We asked other listeners for their choices for this. So we will do that, and then we will get out of here so people can enjoy the rest of their days. Without us, you know what I just realized, guys? This is the last roundtable. You know what? I'm going to save it until after we do this because I don't want to derail us too much. So let's do the tweets, and let's see where that goes. Whew. All right, Tony Hines says Session 9, also angst. Ina Iza, I'm so sorry, says the Thailand production Phobia, spelled 4, the numeral 4, BIA, is truly underrated. It's one of the best Southeast Asian cinema horror. John Muth says 8mm, one of Nick Cage's best films, so dark and full of monsters that are just human. Nirpal Bogal says Exorcist 3, Candyman, Carnival of Souls, Possession, Michael, and Entity. And I spoke with him at length about Candyman, and Candyman. We also have Tyler, who says Cabin in the Woods, It Follows, and The Witch. I don't know if the last two have been around long enough to be considered underrated, but we'll see. Christmas Evil was given to us by Garrett. Stephen E. D'Souza says, I'd say 2000's Possessed, with Showtime's Penny Dreadful's Timothy Dalton. Also, we have Kenneth Crihelli, The Rites of May, possibly in Michigan. Epstein's The Fall of the House of Usher. Scary Movie 3, and every Hanukkah film. We also have Jacob Sevier. I know it's probably Sever, but whatever. WNUF Halloween Special. Philip Kennedy says Triangle from 2009. Kyle Wade says The Witch and VHS 2. John Joseph says Polanski's The Tenant. And Dylan Kirsten says Lords of Salem. Convinced it would have been a lot better received if people had not been seeing Zombie's name on it. So that is all of our feedback. So there you are, ladies and gentlemen. Some great choices to scare yourself with for this Halloween season. Guys, the thing I was going to say is that this is the last roundtable that we will do before the election happens. The next time, ladies and gentlemen at home, that you hear this roundtable, we will be living in a post-election world. In fact, if we record on a Wednesday as usual, it will be the first day living in that post-election world. And if that's not something to scare you, I don't know what it is.
I don't know, something about David S. Pumpkins.
David S. Pumpkins. Any questions? That's all for today's episode.
It could potentially be a Black Mirror episode.
Oh, God. I want to once again remind everyone to go to mubi.com/filmstage to get your free 30-day trial of MUBI. We talked about pigs while talking about Black Mirror. We can talk about pigs again online.
I actually just saw a MUBI-distributed film that's going to hopefully come to theaters as well.
Oh.
This week as well. Should I mention that?
Sure, if you want. What is it?
Sure. There'll be a review up soon. I'm going to finish filing it tonight, but it's called The Life of Ali Mackey, and it is a biopic of the Finnish boxer Ali Mackey, and it is a biopic that is totally uninterested in boxing. So it's about the promotion leading up to this big fight, this burgeoning relationship with a girlfriend. It's kind of dryly funny. It's sweet. It's a really good debut, and I'm not quite sure when it's coming out, but I know MUBI's distributing it, and it's really worth a look. It's called the Life of Ali Mackey again.
Not to be confused with The Secret Life of Alex Mack. Oh, God.
That could get a DVD broken.
I thought I was going to see Alyssa Olenek turn into a metallic pool. Instead, I saw this madness. Anyway, let us know what you thought of our thoughts and opinions by finding us on iTunes, giving us a comment and a rating, reaching out on Twitter at Filmstage Show, or Facebook by searching for The Filmstage Show. And of course, you can go to thefilmstage.com and comment on the pages that these episodes are filed under. Those are the best ways to get in touch with us with your ideas. Or, of course, you could always hack my phone, send me cryptic messages, send me on a scavenger hunt, and then at the end, finally tell me what you want us to talk about. Guys, let's tell the fine people at home where we can be found. Bill Graham.
You can find me avoiding Black Mirror episodes on Twitter at CableBFG. You can also find me writing about movies on freshfiction.tv and The Film Stage Show. I should have a interview with Trevante Rhodes of Moonlight coming up soon. So did that today. So should be up on the site soon.
Michael Snidell.
You can find me lamenting the death of Vine and complaining about millennials on Twitter at Snidell.
Get off my lawn.
Get off my lawn.
I will have some things coming up. I've been recapping the excellent season of Atlanta at Paste, and I'll have an interview with Sarah Godone and Logan Lerman for the Blu-ray release of Indignation.
All right, you can find me on Twitter at Brian J. Rowan, my personal site, dearfilm.net, where I have a review of The Monster, and I will be interviewing Joe Carnahan very soon, so look forward to that. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much. Join us next time.